You're at the Roadhouse on the Shore, and joining us, you home or at the office, Sam?
I'm home. I managed to get out of the office about mid-afternoon and do a little research out in the field, and now I'm at home.
So joining us from his home in Duluth, and the address again? Is Sam Cook, writer for the Duluth News Tribune. Sam, thanks so much for taking time to be with us tonight. Good to talk to you again.
Yep, same to you. Good to be with you.
And you had a chance to visit with Buck a little bit earlier so that you know that he's not here.
He doesn't sound good, and if he's listening, Buck, get well soon.
Yeah, he did not sound good at all. So
no.
Kathy Quinn was nice enough to sit in for Buck, so she's here.
All right.
But we're going to try and cover a few things, see where the conversation goes. But one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about, and I know that you saw the story as well, is that there's a couple of animals that one would normally not associate together who are causing some disruption down in the Piedmont Heights area of Duluth, and that is a black lab and a coyote.
Well, that is apparently the case. I did a story about, 3 weeks ago or something, about a fawn or a young deer that had been killed at the end of somebody's driveway in that same area, and at first it was reported to us that it was a bear that had done it, but then we came to find out that it was a black lab, a very large black lab that has been seen in that area quite a bit, and they don't know if anybody owns it. And then it turns out, after we did that story, that people were familiar with this dog, and also that it seemed to be running with, hanging out with, a coyote. And it was, and then I was gone for a while, and somebody else did the story while I was gone about the coyote in the lab, and it was pretty interesting. It's been documented. There are photos of it. It goes back apparently a few years that they've been hanging out together. And
for crying out loud.
People see it in their backyards, to see the pair of them. And they asked the reporter, Lisa Bauman, should get the credit. She did the story while I was gone,
mm-hmm.
One of my colleagues. And she asked Martha Minchak, who's the DNR, assistant DNR wildlife manager for our area, whether this could be possible. And Martha assured her that, no, it wouldn't work out, that there wouldn't be a lab and a coyote running around together. And then she saw the photos that had been presented to her of these two things hanging out together. And she says, I stand corrected, and obviously they haven't read the behavior books. She said, I have no real explanation other than the coyote must have been rejected from its pack for some reason and has obviously taken up with the lab.
Well, it seems to me that there's several things that are unusual about it.
All right.
And one would be, this is not the kind of behavior that I think one would normally associate with a black lab. You know, I mean, taking down deer, they'll chase them, I know.
I think any black lab running loose would chase deer, and maybe
they'd take one down if they could.
Situation, they would take them down. Yep. And every year we hear about dogs chasing deer, and I think it's all varieties.
I suppose. I know my dog does.
Yeah.
She has no idea what she'd ever do if she ever caught one, obviously.
No, I know. But yeah,
why won't you play with me?
Yeah, right.
Well, the other thing, though, you know, Kathy was mentioning earlier, aren't coyotes normally kind of solitary dudes? Don't they just kind of go on their own?
Well, I think of some of them being that way, and I'm not enough of a biologist to know, but Martha, the wildlife manager, said that it had likely been booted out of its pack or something.
Okay.
They do live
probably for
together.
Hanging around with a lab.
Huh?
Probably for hanging around with a lab.
Yeah, right.
We know where you've been.
Yeah. So I don't know what the deal is, but I mean, typically, like, an animal that's out of his pack is probably in jeopardy. I mean, a wolf out of its pack in some other pack's territory, I mean, that's why wolves kill other wolves sometimes.
Sure.
And I would guess that the same may be true with coyotes, although, like I say, I'm not a biologist and I don't know that for sure. But you tend not to see coyotes in groups, but if you live in the country, you certainly hear them in groups.
Sure, sure.
And yapping and stuff. So.
Well, and I'm wondering, what are the, and I guess nobody knows because this is such an unusual circumstance, but, you know, what are the chances that, assuming that they're male and female, that these two could mate?
That they could meet?
Or mate.
Yeah.
Mate.
Yeah. Well, they've obviously met. Yeah. Martha says in this story that Lisa wrote that, yes, they could breed.
Wow. That would be weird, wouldn't it?
It should be very weird.
Here's another line.
Labodi.
that one of the people they quoted in the story, Andrew Freeland, who I know a little bit, he's seen them twice together in the woods near the antenna farm, and he has also seen what he believes could be their offspring, an animal he calls the creature. Now, nobody else has reported seeing the creature offspring, so... And a lot of people have seen these animals in their backyard, so I don't know.
For crying out loud.
It's hard to know. It's hard to know.
And it sounds like they're pretty much contained to that one part of town?
Yep. It's in the Piedmont neighborhood, and I know one of the guys they quoted in the story, other than Andrew, and where he lives, and it's a wooded area, and there's certainly plenty of deer if they want to eat deer. Coyotes taking down healthy deer is probably pretty unusual, but young deer or something like that, a lab and a coyote could maybe do something.
Sure. So. Huh. Well, it's interesting, that's for sure, and I guess we'll just have to kind of keep our ears and eyes open to see what happens next.
Yeah, we'll see if we know any more. And when I left to go on vacation, I'd gotten the tip that people knew about these two hanging out together, and I said, gee, I don't know whether we're going to be able to document this. I'll pass it on and see what we can find out. Well, turns out a lot of people
have seen them.
Yeah,
amazing.
So, yeah.
Well, you know what? I forgot when you first came on. I was going to greet you obviously with aloha. That would have been good. Hola.
Hola,
Sam.
Yeah, that's one of the Spanish words I do know. you should have heard us in Guatemala. The first morning, my wife, who studied French, they asked her if she wants any coffee, and she says, we. So, you know, they should never really let us out of St. Louis County, probably. when we were with our son, we were okay. We were in Guatemala for a few days, and he's studying Spanish down there and is now fluent. So
your son is studying there?
He's on his semester abroad from college.
I see.
And they're in Guatemala, and they study one-on-one Spanish instruction for the whole time.
Wow.
They're there. Not everyone does it the whole time, but he elected to, and then they also take some other courses, too.
That would have to be considered immersion, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and he's living with a family, there's...
I was going to ask you why you went to Guatemala.
Yeah.
That obviously explains part of it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when our daughter was in France, we went to France. These are places that I think of, you know, going to SAG as kind of a big trip, and now suddenly we're getting yanked around the, you know, world in some ways, and it's quite refreshing.
And my guess is that your wife's wee went over much better in France than in Guatemala.
Yeah, she was better with ordering coffee in France than in.
Well, now, was this just part of a longer trip, or was the whole time spent in Guatemala?
We were gone for about 12 days, and we traveled a couple other places in Guatemala. And in Guatemala is a very... I mean, I didn't know much about it, but read up on it before we left. And it's a poor country. It's beautiful. It's volcanic in a lot of areas, and it's big hills rolling. Not rolling hills. I mean, it's just steep country and wooded and, you know, brushy kind of. But wonderful people, and they tolerated our poor Spanish, and we got where we were going. We got to climb up an active volcano. How bright is that? I don't know. You know, everybody in the group is going, okay, we got a guide, here we go.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, it hasn't exploded for erupted, I guess is the word, for quite a while, since last year.
Just last year? Oh, wow,
yeah.
What the heck.
And so they take us up, Carlo, our guide, takes us up to this area where there's a fissure in the rocks and about, you know, 18 inches wide, and he lays a few sticks across it, and in about 45 seconds, they're on fire.
No kidding.
And, yeah.
That
so
kind
I mean,
of heat's still being generated.
Yeah, and we aren't near the top. That was kind of near the bottom of the old lava flow from last year, but up top you can still see smoke coming out of the top of the mountain higher up.
I would think a person would be a little apprehensive. I would be apprehensive about doing that. You know, it's one thing if it went off 25 years ago.
Yeah.
A year,
I'm kind of one of these people who figures, well, they've probably checked this out. These tour groups go up every day. You don't have to sign. Well, you wouldn't have to sign anything there, probably. But
probably not.
And so then you think, well, you know, you've lived a pretty good life. If something did happen, you know, I want to keep on going for a while. But
yeah.
On the other hand, I'm not just going to sit at home either. So you know, everybody's got to make their own decision about
that. I think one of my first moves would be to check the average life expectancy of the guides.
You know, they were all really young. They were really young guys.
I'll bet they are.
Mm-hmm. No, it seemed reasonable. I don't know.
Now, have you traveled before in Latin America or South America?
No, we have been to the Caribbean and the Mexico, into Mexico and stuff like that, but a number of times, but not to Central America or to South America. And I'm ready to go back to Costa Rica next year.
Oh, that's right. You've been to Costa Rica.
No, I haven't. But I'm ready to go back to Central America and to Costa Rica, where a number of my friends have gone.
Yes.
And it's economically better off. And there's, you know, whitewater rafting and fishing and other things. So I would like to do that.
And Kathy and I were talking before we went on the air about we both have some friends who for several years have gone down, their nurses, and have gone down on medical missions to Guatemala, badly needed. And they've kind of, when really between what you're saying and what they've said, really my only knowledge of Guatemala, I hate to say that, but, and it kind of said it the same way, obviously, very poor country. How does that show up in terms of when you're down there as a visitor?
Evident every moment of every day. There are people trying to, they have what they call the informal economy down there, and that is people just trying to sell whatever they can. As we were on our shuttle from one town up to where our son was at higher elevation, and we passed through a community, and all the traffic on a four-lane road is stopped at traffic lights, and two young Guatemalan boys run out into the street. One climbs on the other one's shoulders, and they both begin juggling. And
oh, really?
They juggle until the traffic light is about to change, and then the top one hops down, and they grab a donation from a guy and a pickup at the head of the line, and they race back to the curb. And there are people selling beautiful fabric cloth stuff that I suppose a lot of them have made themselves.
Oh, sure.
All manner of things, especially in areas frequented more by tourists. But you just, you know, if they have big agricultural operations in part of the state and there's not a tractor, or in part of the country, and there's not a tractor in sight, doing hand labor with hose, and a woman walking along the side of the road with a huge bundle of firewood on top of her head, balanced on her head, and she's carrying a baby on her back. And it's just, and the homes where a lot of the people live are just very humble places. And they're, yet they're very warm and friendly people when you engage them.
We're visiting with Sam Cook, writer for the Duluth News Tribune, who just recently returned from Guatemala. Trips like that, I think, do give one a whole different perspective on our way of life.
Any time you do that, I mean, when we visit our daughter in France or go to Mexico or whatever, you have an appreciation for what you have, but you also, what it does for me, it jars me out of our such familiar patterns, and it says, look, there are other ways to live in the world, and you don't have to be as clean as we are, or, you know, have the way other people use water, and everything is completely different than what we do. And it'd be good if we should all be, we probably shouldn't be required, but it'd be all good if we all got out of our little safe places once in a while.
And I think that in countries like that, most of the world, as a matter of fact, put a much higher premium on things that we really take for granted and are not very good stewards of. And I think that, as you say, travels like that kind of hopefully shake us to say, you know, maybe there's a different way I can do this. Maybe there's a better way that I can do this.
I just think it's good to be jarred out of that. And is it out of your comfort zone? Yeah, I think is a little bit, especially when you don't know the language. And I told Phyllis during the trip, I spend about half the time thinking that I've been taken by somebody who I've just paid something to, and the other half of the time thinking that I probably didn't tip that person enough.
Yeah.
You kind of just forge on as best you can, never really quite knowing for sure. If you were there longer, you'd figure it out. And it all evens out, I suppose, but you just aren't operating with all the information.
No, that's right.
It's a very... I think it's good for us to be in that spot once in a while.
Oh, absolutely.
And I've been that way up in the Arctic and some Inuit villages and Indian communities as well.
Well, and shifting gears a little bit, Kathy asked me earlier for my opinion on this, so we'll get yours as long as you're here.
Yeah.
When's ice out?
Oh. I know, but I'm not at liberty to divulge that. And I know for every lake, not just a general date. I don't know. You know, it seemed like a kind of a little serious, more serious winter than we're used to, but I don't think it's too far beyond normal. And I know you guys had tons of snow up the Gunslint and stuff.
Up over the hill, we sure did.
Yeah,
you bet.
But, you know, every year we always have this kind of panic. Oh, it's just the ice is never going to go out. But, you know, what we fail to recognize is just the power of that sun now that it's up at a good angle and out longer every day. And, boy, once that ice darkens up, it rots pretty quickly and it doesn't take too long. So I'm not worried about the, you know.
I love an optimist.
Absolutely.
I don't know. It's just my nature. A couple years ago, the ice didn't go out. I was going to do the opener on Vermilion, and I was calling the guy I was supposed to be with the night before. Well, is it going to go? Yeah, I think it's going to go, he said, you know. And it did, but not by much. You know, it was like the day before. And so I don't know. What do you guys think?
I don't know. I said, I don't know. I really have no idea. Kathy works, of course, for the Forest Service. She'll be done here shortly, so she'd like to see it out.
Well, I might be still working for them. Who knows?
That's a whole other discussion we could have.
Yeah.
But, so, of course, she'd like to get on the lakes a little before.
I'm going to say, I think it's going to be out before the smaller lakes. I'm not going to go to Sag or Gunflint.
Right.
No,
those are
much.
In a class of their own. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. But I'll say, I'm going to say by May.
Yeah,
by first of May.
Typical for, like, I don't know, up in your latitude and stuff is around the end of April sometime, I think.
Yep.
You know, 27th, 28th, somewhere in there. And I don't think we'll be too much beyond that. I have a lake trout fishing trip planned for Quetico May 8th.
Oh.
And I'm fully confident we'll be paddling in.
Okay.
So.
Good. Not only optimistic, but confident.
And
I like
just
it.
Darn foolish. I don't
know.
One year we had to paddle around a large sheet of ice on one lake.
Well, you must have run into that, Kathy, and you're going in and skirting some ice.
I did a canoe trip one year for fun as the ice actually really wasn't out yet, and we ended up dragging our canoes all the way around the eastern perimeter of Basswood Lake to get up into Quetico.
Right?
We were literally dragging it on the ice. And then we found open water, had a couple nice days up there, and our way back down through Basswood,
dragged it again.
No ice.
Oh, it was gone.
All gone. Huge lake, all gone in just, you know, a day and a half.
I did a story a long time ago on a couple from Virginia, and he worked in the construction trade, and every year they would take off to go on an ice out canoe trip, and they would go for 3 weeks. And they would just go up, and if it wasn't out yet, they'd just wait.
Yeah.
And then they, you know, it usually wasn't more than a couple days, and then they'd go, and if there was more ice, they'd wait a little longer or whatever, but they went every year at ice out. I just thought that was so cool.
That's pretty funny.
You know, you're not going to run into anybody.
Well, it's quiet out there.
It's quiet,
yep.
And you know you're the first one out there.
Absolutely.
It's actually one of my favorite times to go because of that.
Not a lot of competition for the campsite.
You get your pick of the lot. And
did you go in early last year, Kathy, when everything happened?
I was so bummed. No, we ended up taking a trip out to the Black Hills.
Okay.
And so I remember driving out west thinking, what am I doing here? We should be. But it was great, too. So.
Yeah, three of us went in out of Ely on like April 7th or 8th.
Isn't
that amazing?
We went up to Knife Lake, and it was kind of cool and a little breezy, and it got down below freezing at night, which is no big deal. But what was weird is there were almost no birds there. I think we heard one song sparrow. There wasn't a loon in the country.
Right.
That was weird.
That is weird.
There was like one herring gull. And it was almost eerie to be out there and have it that quiet.
Almost like a different world.
Yeah. But we went just because we could, you know.
Oh, sure.
I don't know.
We've been visiting with Sam Cook. Sam, of course, is a writer for the Duluth News Tribune. He joins us not frequently enough. And Sam, I want to thank you so much for taking time to visit with us this evening. It's always fun to talk to you.
Always my pleasure, and you guys have a good evening.
You too. Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
You.